You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello and welcome along to the William Hill Racing Podcast. We're looking ahead to Tuesday's action on this edition. You'll hear us all live on William Hill Racing Radio from 12:50pm with Gordon Brown, John O'Connell and Dale Gibson in the studio. Busy Tuesday racing to get stuck into as well. We've got action on the turf at Yarmouth, over the obstacles at Exeter and on the all-weather at Newcastle. Action over the Irish Sea at the Curragh as well. We're squeezing the best of the action there. And evening racing from Kempton too, so plenty to get stuck into. My name is Mark Walton and I'm joined in the studio by Racing Radio Nobility, Lord John Budden. How are you, John?
Oh, I'm okay. Yes, I'm delighted to be here. And, you know, it could be a good day, Mark.
Yeah, it's nice and busy, good stuff. And it's one of those great days that you get this time of year, John, where if you're a jumps fan, you've got something to look forward to. If you're clinging onto the flat, you've still got something to look forward to. And if you like your all-weather racing, you've got plenty to go out there as well. So,
yeah, absolutely. Great. One for all.
Yes. We're going to go through the questions in the Monday jury as well, which is a nice reflection on what we saw on Champions Day at the weekend, and a little glance to the weekend's feature race, which is the Vertem Futurity, which is the big Group 1 finale for the two-year-olds at Doncaster this weekend. We'll start with the first question, though, obviously. What did you make of Champions Day, and did it live up to its billing?
Yeah, I think it did live up to its billing. It's one of those remarkable things. I thought it was absolutely hopeless idea when it was actually first initiated, but it has grown on me. And I thought it was excellent on Saturday. Obviously, the atmosphere was tremendous, big crowd. And despite the fact that the ground itself was, you know, really testing and grueling, the field stood up really well. There were some excellent horses on view, and the racing was extremely exciting.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the. I agree with what you're saying. When the idea was first coming into play, and you saw the weather every year, and you saw the ground, and you thought, how can you have Champions Day at this time of year when the ground's always a mess? But they deal with it very well, don't they, Ascot? And every year we seem to get great finishes and great racing, which is brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a great day, and, you know, I have to swallow what I said really at the start. Although, Mark, I would point out that my sort of big ante of the Champions Day was not so much the ground, although I could understand that, but it was what I call shortening the season. Mm. It sticks slightly in the gullet that the flat racing champions title is from sort of April to the end of September or the beginning of October, when, you know, it used to go on much longer, start earlier, go later, and you had a real sort of campaign over the whole year.
Yeah, I mean, traditionally it'd be November handicap, wouldn't it? So you'd have an extra month of the season, pretty much. So.
Exactly, yes, yeah. And would start, of course, with Doncaster in March.
Yeah. Second question, John. Kew Gardens just edged out Stradivarius, but who will get the better of that rivalry next year?
Well, the question is, I think, Mark, will they ever meet again? Mm. I mean, there is definitely a theory, and it may only be a theory, that Stradivarius is going to come back in trip and campaign over sort of a mile and a half and a little bit further. While Kew Gardens quite clearly showed on Saturday that he stays every yard of 2 miles. So I have that feeling that they won't meet again. If they did, I think it would depend on the ground. I think Stradivarius ran really well on Champions Day and jolly nearly pulled it out of the fire. Well, the mud rather than the fire. And considering he clearly is better on better ground, he did extremely well. But on the other hand, Kew Gardens showed real tough tenacity in fighting back after being headed by Stradivarius, you know, with half a furlong to go. And I would have thought that Kew Gardens is certain to be campaigned in the long-distance cup races, and I would imagine he would go very close in the Gold Cup at Ascot next year.
Mm. That might be where they meet, I suppose, because Stradivarius, the reigning Gold Cup champion, you'd think he'd go defend his crown all being well, wouldn't you?
Yes, you would. Yeah. And in answer to the question, were they to meet again, shall we say, on good ground at Ascot in the Gold Cup, I would still be a Stradivarius man.
I would agree, John, as well. I think he's run a blinder there with everything, conditions-wise, against him, Stradivarius. And if you put him back on his preferred surface, I think that just makes the difference, because obviously there wasn't a lot in it on that occasion. Where will Star Catcher fit in next year with John Gosden's deck stacked with quality?
I think very near the top, obviously with Enable running again. You know, that sets up a marvellous sort of activity of reappearance when one was thought that Stud was going in that direction. Mm. But Star Catcher, I get the impression both from Frankie Dettori and probably more from John Gosden that he really does rate this Oppenheimer filly. And I thought that she did extremely well at Ascot on Saturday. She has done well on better ground earlier in the season. They say she's going to improve over the winter and grow physically stronger, which is, you know, almost certain to take case. And I personally think she will go to a very, very high calibre next season.
If Enable and Starcatcher happen to bump into each other next season, it's a great position for Frankie to be in, but I'm sure it's a decision he wouldn't want to have to make. Which would he ride out of the pair? That'd be a bit of a headache for him, wouldn't it?
It'd be very interesting. I think he'd have to ride Enable.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he clearly is devoted to Enable, and Enable has never let him down.
No.
I mean, if we go back nearly a month now, I did think that Waldegeist was the one that Enable had to beat. I fancied that Waldegeist was very much a Longchamp autumn horse, and André Farb was in excellent shape. So I was not that surprised that Enable just went down to Waldegeist. But my gosh, she ran well.
Oh, she did.
And obviously she's, you know, fit as a flea and clearly hasn't lost any sort of sparkle or will to race. And I think Frankie would have to choose Enable. But Starcatcher is obviously a name to, you know, bear very closely in mind.
I would be very amazed, to be fair, if he ever got off Enable, because what she's done with Frankie, it's more than just a racing partnership. He loves the horse, doesn't he? So,
wonderful. Then, you know, in tears after the arc, and not really because he had lost, but that she had lost.
Yeah.
Devoted to her.
King of Change looks smart in winning the QE2 on Saturday. Will he dominate the mile division next year?
Interesting statement, Mark. I thought he did run very well in the QE2 and won it like a classy horse. And he is a classy horse, King of Change. No question about that. He's been fairly lightly raced, but he's been placed in a classic and he's been unbeaten since. And he won one of the biggest races at Ascot on Champions Day in excellent style. I think he's certain to be a major player in a one-mile contest, provided he remains fit next season. But to dominate, I'm not quite so sure about that. I mean, there are some very decent horses about, and I wouldn't necessarily at this moment put up King of Change as a dominator.
No, exactly. I mean, the market has underrated him really so far this season, and I think all he's done is prove that he's a top Group 1 miler, but whether he can dominate from there, I wouldn't think he would, to be fair.
Well, that's exactly what I think, Mark. I think he'll win good races, and who knows, he may over the winter develop into something really special. At the moment, I would just say he's an excellent horse who's done remarkably well and clearly has the ability to compete on level terms with the best milers next season.
I don't think we'll get 12-1 about him anytime soon again. If you look at his prices for the Guineas, he was 66-1. He was 11-4 at Sandown and 12-1 at Ascot. I don't think we'll get those kind of prices next year, perhaps.
No, I think that's absolutely true. I think our firm will be, you know, taking a careful worry, the wary note.
Magical is so consistent and resilient. Would you take her to the Breeders' Cup, and if so, to which race?
Yes, I definitely would take her to the Breeders' Cup, always assuming she, is entirely fit and 100% fit. But she's had the reputation of returning after a fairly short while to run extremely well. I mean, Saturday was a good example. I didn't think she ran that well in the Arc. Others had a different opinion and said she did actually run pretty soundly in the arc. Well, she ran well, but not outstandingly well, but I thought she was excellent at Ascot. And she is, after all, a Group 1 winner, a multiple Group 1 winner, and she has shown that she comes back relatively quickly after racing, loves it. I think the Breeders' Cup would suit her down to the ground. I hope she goes. And if I'm a bit of a funk when it comes to actually choosing races, and the Breeders' Cup Turf would presumably be the prize, but I hope she goes for the Fillies and Mares Turf Mile. I think that will suit her down to the ground, as she ought to win it, and she'll come back, you know, smiling all over her face.
She was second to Enable in the Breeders' Cup Turf last year, and I think if they do change idea and go for the filly and mare, like you say, I think she's certainly the one to beat in that kind of contest. So yeah, I'd lean the same way, John. I think if you take her to the filly and mare, then you've got a big chance of her coming back with a win.
Yes.
If you take it to the turf, then there is one or two others that could cause a problem. So,
well, the competition would definitely be stiffer in the turf itself, but she ought to do very well in the Fillies and Mile. And I think the ground and the type of course running over the Breeders' Cup this year will suit her down to the ground. And she is remarkably consistent.
Yeah, and she's been on the go for a little while as well, so giving her an easy race at the Breeders' Cup might be a smart idea. She's been on the go since April, so...
Yes, yeah. Yes, I think so. But, I mean, it'd be very tempting to go there.
Who wins the Vertem Futurity on Saturday, and can they prove a credible rival to Pinatubo next year?
Well, the stats indicate that it's got to be Aidan O'Brien again, doesn't it? going for the hat-trick, and I think four wins in the race or the equivalent contest over the past decade, and he's got a sort of handful of really fancied runners, and I think whatever he chooses to run, and I thought it was interesting in Monday's Racing Post that the markets, for example, gave no prices for Saturday's race because they, like me, are not absolutely sure what's going to run. Of those who've been mentioned, I'm an Innisfree man myself. I think Innisfree has got the ability to improve. And if in the overnight lineup, I will be tempted to have a very small part of the Budden Wallet on Innisfree. As for Pinatubo, hype! Mark, that's what I find, not depressing, but I do find that this business of hyping up really good horses to the point that they are invincible attempts the devil to say, ho, ho, I shall prick a balloon here. I think to a certain extent it happened with Enable because, you know, on the arc Saturday, there every headline in the Racing Post suggested that Enable was completely unlikely to be beaten. And, you know, I begged to differ on that occasion and was lucky enough to actually sort of pencil in the winner. But, I don't think you can hype horses up to that extent. Now, Pinatubo is clearly extremely good. Don't think I'm sort of downgrading the horse. And Godolphin obviously consider that this is a real star of the future. Mm. And they may be very well right. And certainly Pinatubo, you know, battled back really well to win the Dewhurst in good style in the end, going away. But I wouldn't, you know, at this stage, say from 2 to 3 that he is invincible next season.
Yeah, he's got to go and prove that he's trained on and that he's as good as a 3-year-old as a 2-year-old. But that's always the imponderable, isn't it, with these really good 2-year-olds, whether they're as good next year.
Yeah, the horse he beat in the Dewhurst was Arizona, wasn't it?
Yes.
And you know, I thought Arizona, for example, ran very well. Mm. And there was a moment about a furlong out that I thought perhaps that Pinatubo was not going to win. Well, the answer was he pulled it out and he did very well. And he probably proved to be a star, but I just can't bear people hyping horses up at this stage to believe that they are completely invincible.
Okay. In terms of on Saturday, just a note that Donnacha O'Brien takes part in the Monday jury and he says that he's looking at Mogul and Innisfree as two very nice horses who will be better next year. So again, that makes it very interesting with regards to the Guineas, of course, next season. But the fact that he's highlighted those two, maybe keep an eye on those two for the Vertem Futurity on Saturday.
Yes, I think that's very much the case.
Yeah, both lightly raced, both come here chasing hat-tricks. So, yeah, we'll probably learn more from them this weekend.
And perhaps, you know, what Doniger eventually chooses to ride or is told to ride will be very crucial.
Yep. That's the Monday jury then for another week. Questions there in the Racing Post. We now move on to the Best of Tuesday's action, and Lord Budden has picked out two races for us, the 3.10 at Newcastle and the 4.10 at Exeter, so a bit of all-weather racing and a bit of action over the jumps. At Newcastle, the 3.10 is an optional claiming handicap, Class 2 event over 6 furlongs, quite open at the time of recording this, 11-2 the field. Athol Blair Boy at the top of the market at 11-2. Equiano Springs 6-1, 7-1 for Saluti. Staxton is 15-2, 8-1 for Buridan. Inti Saab is 8-1 as well, 9-1 above the rest, 10-1 Paddy Power, and 11s or bigger prices for the rest. Some pretty good handicappers in this, John. We see them in these big handicaps throughout the course of the season, and as the market suggests, it's an open race to get stuck into this.
It certainly is. Very competitive indeed, with Nigel Tinkler and Faye McManaman on the current market leadership, and one or two others also mentioned there. But I've chosen three, really, in this contest, Mark, and they are three horses, I think, who have been running, as you say, in much better company for the greater part of their careers, and indeed in this season, and they're now actually coming down to claiming status, and they ought to run very well. The first of them, just in sort of alphabetical order to a certain extent, is Above the Rest. Now, David Barron's horses have been quietly picking up some decent winners. Even Kin Ren has managed to score decently. And I think his stable are in pretty good shape. And he's got Above the Rest here. And this horse has run extremely decently in good class, sort of 6-7 furlong handicaps at Newmarket last time and Sandown before that, and now comes down to an optional claimer at Newcastle, and I think has got to go pretty well. The next one, just keeping in alphabetical orders, Inti Saab. Inti Saab's an old favourite of mine, David O'Meara's horse. Oh, he's been so unlucky, really, in races like the Great St. Wilfrid and other 6 furlong handicaps, always there or thereabouts, but not just getting his head in front. Last time, he was running in that very competitive York Sprint Trophy, in which he finished 9th. Now, that was no disgrace, because it was a very big field and an extremely competitive race. And Danny Toto rides here, and it would not surprise me at all to see Inti Saab winning. However, I've got to go for the third one, the last of the alphabetical horses, and that is Staxton. Now, Staxton is trained by Tim Easterby. And you were reminding me earlier, Mark, that Tim Easterby is in very good form. Goodness gracious me, whether it's on the flat or over hurdles, the Easterby horses are simply banging in the winners. And let's hope he goes on for some time. Staxton is a Newcastle winner. Could that be crucial? The last time Staxton ran at Newcastle, he won. Now, recently, Staxton has been quietly fancied for A, the York Sprint Trophy, and B, the Air Gold Cup. He didn't actually run quite as well as expected on either, but was not disgraced. However, he looks to me, back here at Newcastle, to be well treated, and as he obviously goes on the Tepita surface, Staxton and Tim Easterby will be the choice.
Staxton then the selection for Lord Budden in that 3.10 at Newcastle, 15-2 in the market. And if you are fancying an each way bet there, here at William Hill we're going a fifth of the odds, 1, 2, 3 and 4 each way, even though there's only 14 runners. So a bit of extra place value if you fancy Staxton, and 15-2 at the time of recording. That's the selection for Lord Budden. 4.10 at Exeter is where we head next. This is a 2 mile, 1.5 furlong beginner's chase, the best mate beginner's chase to give it its title. We've got only a field of 5, John, which I suppose sounds a little bit disappointing, but there's some decent horses in here.
Yes, it is disappointing. There's no question about that, Mark. I sort of chose this race to go for earlier in the day because I thought there would be a bigger field and a more competitive one. And it's interesting, for example, that Evan Williams, whose horses are running extremely well at the moment, had what I thought three fancied runners to choose from for this Best Mate Beginners Chase, and he's taken all three out, which would indicate that he has to be frightened of something. Now, it may be obvious, but the something is quite clearly Paul Nichols's horse, Southfield Stone. This is a very decent animal. I mean, you know, if you go back to the hurdles campaign at the sort of mid to the end of last season, you will see Southfield Stone winning the Dovecote Novices Hurdle at Kempton, which is a very, very competitive race, and was good enough to be fancied for the big novice hurdle at Aintree. He didn't win. He, in fact, dropped back, I think, to seventh, but those who will have looked carefully at it will have seen that he made a dreadful mistake about three out, which absolutely cooked his chances. He probably wouldn't have won, but it was a very high-class race, and I would have thought that Southfield Stone has been extremely well-schooled and has to be hard to beat in this beginner's chase. What else we got? What possible dangers? Well, the Mighty Don represents Nick Gifford, who actually has had one or two horses have run quite well in this corresponding race before, but I think the Mighty Don's got rather a lot to do. And then we have Moonlighter from Jane Williams's yard with Chester Williams in the saddle. Useful form in the early part of last season, but was very well beat at Ascot when last seen. Thistle Do Nicely interests me a little bit in that Jamie Snowden's horses are in terrific form. And he had a whole tally of winners over the weekend. And this could be an improver. Has run in a beginner's chase at Warwick last time out. Made a mistake, I think, three or four out, but was actually quite well beaten at the time. And finally, we have Literally C. Now, Literally C could be the dark horse in this contest. Hasn't run over jumps for some while, I don't think, Mark, but has been fit from the flat and not running badly in some quite good contests. What concerns me a little bit is that Harry Fry's horses have yet really to strike this season. Mind you, it's very early doors, and you know, Literally C could well be the one to open the door. However, it does seem to me that Paul Nichols has the key to this Best Mate Beginners Chase, and Southfield Stone has to be the choice.
Yeah, he's had a great start to the new jump season, as you'd expect as well, Paul Nichols. He's started to unleash those numerous winners that he's been keeping for the winter, and Southfield Stone, a nice prospect for this season. So interesting to see how he gets on over the larger obstacles on Tuesday. Thank you very much, John. Been a pleasure as always. Best of luck and enjoy the racing on Tuesday.
Oh, that's great. Thank you very much.
That's the thoughts of Lord Budden then on Tuesday's racing, and you can hear it all live on William Hill Racing Radio from 12:50 PM. Gordon Brown, John O'Connell and Dale Gibson, the team in the studio. We've got Yarmouth, Exeter and Newcastle in the afternoon, accompanied by some of the action from the Curra, and we've also got evening racing as well from Kempton Park. So plenty to get stuck into. Do join them for that. Thank you very much for listening to this William Hill Racing podcast, and enjoy Tuesday's action.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.